and I knew we were out of time. I needed to get this right, or we would hit a lot worse than a bad swell in the water. I whipped my hands up and forward, dragging every bit of sand I could find up around us, like the swell of a storm just as we reached the shore. We hit the sand with a force that sent every one of us jolting against the railings and the mast, everyone bracing for impact, worried that we'd topple over as we hit the sand of the desert and crash, our bodies shattering among the debris of the ship. And then we kept going. The sand didn't stop us. It swelled around us like waves, carrying the ship over the shore and into the desert. We were sailing on a sea of sand. The shock came over me so quickly that I almost lost control of the desert. I grabbed hold of it again as I stared at the sand banking the ship on either side, swelling up around us, high enough to keep the ship steady, driving us forward like the current with the power of the wind on our side. We were speeding ahead. A bubble of frantic elation swelled in my chest through the pain. This was impossible, but I was doing it. I shifted us, correcting the angle a little, as Jin called out instructions I only half heard. We were flying over the unforgiving desert. We were skimming across the sand sea. And in a second, I understood what it was that Jin missed about this. The freedom of gliding through the world, forgetting for a moment where you had come from, and not worrying about where you were going. Being, just for a moment, nowhere at all. I couldn't help it. I let out a whoop. Shahzad took it up next. She was beaming into the wind with a smile like I hadn't seen on her since we'd rescued the prisoners from Aramot. The rest of the ship quickly took up the cry, cheering as they released their white-knuckled grips on the ship, as they realized we were really doing the impossible. The Gallen camp came into view over the rise of sand, line after line of tents appearing in our path, like islands in the sea of sand. But I didn't have any intention of stopping. As we got closer, I could see men in foreign uniforms dashing out of their tents, running frantically out of the way at the sight of us. The sand swelled below us as we crested nearer and nearer. "Everyone get ready," Shahzad called, as I steered the ship toward the dead center of the tents. "And raise our colors." I saw something bunched in one of the young rebel's hands. It looked like a flag. She attached it to a rope on the mainsail and started pulling, raising it high above us as Shahzad and Rahim both started shouting orders about drawing weapons, and Jin started bellowing new orders at the ship. But I didn't hear much of it, because there, unfurling high above us at the top of the mast, was a dark blue flag stitched with a golden sun. Ahmed's symbol, a declaration of the rebellion. A signal to the Gallen of who was coming for them. A signal that this country wasn't theirs to take. It was ours. All around us, rebels were pointing guns over the edge of the ship, using the banister as support, angling the firearms downward. I saw cannons appear through portholes around the hull. The ship wobbled a little bit as I lost my focus, but I kept us going, straight and steady toward the sudden chaos blooming from the Gallen camp.
"Everybody brace,"
Jin shouted as the front of the ship hit the first of the tents. I felt the tent splinter below the hull, like firewood under my boot.
"Fire,"
Shahzad called the order as we plowed forward, shattering tents ahead of us. Suddenly the air was filled with gunfire and the boom of cannons. Shrapnel tore through the air, shredding everything in its path. The wind caught a tent, whipping it away from the ground and casting it high in the air. The sun struck it as it soared over us, piercing through 100 tiny holes in the dark blue fabric, so that for a moment it looked like 100 stars peering down on us, and then the canvas was dashed away. To my left, a bullet struck a cache of gunpowder, sending up a blossom of flames to one side of the ship. It caught across the camp, looking like paper men going up in flames. The sand picked up a soldier in its wake, reeling him toward us, making him disappear under the bow of the ship. and I thought of a soldier like him marching through Dust Walk when I was a little girl, boots kicking up dust as he dragged a man out of his house and shot him in the name of their occupation, and I didn't feel sorry. I fought through the pain in my side. Even if I loosened my grip on the desert a little, the wind would carry us until I grabbed it back. But now I forced the sand around us to swell, overcoming the gallon like a wave. And then I looked up. Straight ahead, the sand ended, giving way to stone as the ground sloped up, as desert turned to mountains. Panic set in. "Jin!" I called.
"I see it,"
he shouted back, already motioning for the sailors to bring in the sails, already trying to slow the ship. "There's a mountain!" I shouted.
"I see it,"
he said again. I had to do something. I watched everyone scramble. "Everyone hold on!" I shouted. But my voice was lost in the gunfire. I caught Shahzad's eye, raising my hands just a little. She took up the cry, but she was muffled too. I watched as she made the decision. Pulling out a knife, she sliced through the rope at her middle. I cursed her under my breath. Untethered, Shahzad made her way down the line of gunmen, repeating the order, telling people to hold tight, forcing them to drop their guns to their sides as they laced their arms through the banisters or around masts, anchoring themselves as she ran down the line toward us. I waited. Shahzad needed to get closer. She needed to get to safety. I waited. I waited. Until I couldn't wait any longer. I twisted my power, yanking the sand around in one violent twist, changing the course of the ship at a hard angle, wrenching up the desert on either side to buttress us. I reached for Shahzad as the ship listed hard to the right. She was too far away. I could already tell as the ship tipped, preparing to send anyone not firmly attached over the edge. Jin got there first. Letting go of the useless wheel, trusting his tether, he launched himself down the incline of the ship, running down the deck as it became a steep slope, as I fought to keep the ship propped up. He reached Shahzad a second before the ship tilted too hard, grabbing her to him as the ground beneath them gave out, pulling the rope around his waist taut. I breathed in relief as he anchored her. The two of them swung like a pendulum, while the chaos turned to stillness around us as the ship settled in the sand, flat on its side. Everyone was still on board by the grace of a good rope. I could barely breathe through the agony, but I heard Rahim call out,
"Is everyone still alive?" "Yeah, call out if you're dead," Sam added,
and Shahzad laughed. Then I was laughing too, and I couldn't stop, because it was ridiculous and impossible what we had just done. But I had managed it, and we were all still alive, and we were almost at the end. Chapter 32. We struck camp halfway up the mountain, at the last village before the fortress of Ilyaz. Bilal had to know we were coming, but our path hadn't met with any resistance. The people of Ilyaz knew Rahim from his days in service to Lord Bilal's father, and as we made our way up, they came out to stare. When we stopped for the night, the locals welcomed him like a long-lost son. The whole village came out, carrying platters of food and pitchers of the wine that had made Ilyaz rich. There had been no news from the fortress in weeks, the people said. Some said Bilal was already dead. "He's not dead," I said, glancing up at the fortress above us. I could see stone towers through the crags in the mountains, casting their shadows over the green vines that dominated the hillside. We would be there before midday tomorrow. Bilal was still alive. I had the choice to keep him that way. We wouldn't need to turn his army against him. I hadn't told anyone about Zahir's gift, not even Shahzad. I wasn't sure why. but I really ought to say something now, as Rahim set out the plan for tomorrow on how to approach the fortress. He was calculating how many of his soldiers he thought he could count on to lay down weapons right away, when a young girl's voice came from outside.
No!
She was screaming.
I need to talk to him!
We were all outside in the space of a few heartbeats. The little girl stood in the doorway of the house we'd taken rooms in. She was about 8 years old, her dark hair in a tightly coiled braid around her head, and she was thrashing and screaming as our guards hung on to her.
I need to speak to the commander, please!
Mara.
Rahim pressed out into the small town square, where he could see the little girl properly. Her head twisted at the sound of her name.
Commander Rahim!
She wrenched forward to meet him, though one of our rebels still held her.
Let me go!
She turned, and with all the force of her tiny body, she slammed her heel down on his instep, forcing him to let her go with a violent string of curses, far from fit for a little girl's ears. Not that she was listening anyway. She was already bolting toward us.
I like her, Shahzad said. Here's hoping she's on our side. I taught her that, Rahim said, with a hint of pride in his voice.
I could imagine he had. Separated from his little sister, whom he would have given anything for, he'd found another young girl to replace Layla. He dropped to his knees to meet Mara at eye level as she barreled straight for him.
You have to help!
She was breathing hard, her tiny face flushed.
I ran all the way here. He's going to kill them. He's going to kill them all.
Rahim looked at her, brow furrowed.
Who is?
Lord Bilal.
She swallowed, trying desperately to spill out all the words fast enough.
He knows you're coming. He knows he doesn't stand a chance. And there's this girl, a princess, they say, who's been whispering terrible things into his ear for weeks.
Layla. Damn her. We'd taken her out of Isman to keep her from causing trouble, but somehow she'd managed anyway.
He's going to poison the whole garrison, so you can't turn them against him.
We all stared at the little girl as the words sank in, the horror of what she was telling us. And then we started to move as one. We pieced it together as we went. Mara worked in Lord Bilal's kitchens. She was the little sister of a young soldier in the Ilyas command. Lord Bilal had seen us coming. Using a ship as a battering ram wasn't exactly inconspicuous. He'd announced to the garrison that there'd be a feast that evening in our honor. Mara had been hard at work in the kitchens with another servant. The other girl was new. She didn't know she wasn't supposed to sample the wine, or she didn't care. Mara had watched the girl drop dead right in front of her. It seemed Bilal had decided that if we weren't about to give him a demji to save his life, he wasn't going to let us take his army. He was ready to kill hundreds out of spite. We wouldn't be able to make it on foot. Jin, Sam, Shahzad, and I scattered, looking for Iz and Maz, as Ahmed started to leave instructions for what to do while we were gone. Rahim stayed with Mara. We found the twins quickly enough, and it took a handful of words for them to burst out of their human shapes into those of giant rocks. By the time we returned, Shahzad had grabbed the weapons we needed. I caught the gun she tossed me almost without looking, as Jin pulled me onto Maz's back. Rahim also climbed up, settling Mara with us. The little girl let out a scream as we launched into the sky. It was a matter of moments before we were soaring over the walls of the fortress, the last of the sun touching the horizon as we did. The courtyard was eerily empty when we landed, and the walls we'd flown over were unmanned. But it wasn't deserted. Ahead of us, doors that led into the main hall were flung wide open. Light and noise and celebration spilled out invitingly into the gloom as we slid off the twins' backs.
Is it me?
Sam voiced what we were all thinking.
Or does this seem like a trap?
It's not you, Shazad said.
Well, waiting won't change anything,
Ahmed said, making the decision.
We go in now.
We fell into a formation naturally. Rahim and Ahmed taking the lead, little Mara still clinging to Rahim's sleeve. Shazad and me flanking them on either side, Sam and Jin taking up the rear, with the twins slipping in and out between us, now in the shape of cats. We passed below a huge arch made of the same red stone as the rest of the fortress. Two heavy wooden doors sat propped open, guiding us into an immense stone hall. Inside it stretched up two levels, painted wooden beams supporting the ceiling high above us. By the light of hanging oil lamps, I could see faces and animals carved into the beams, gazing down on the scene below. Two dozen tables set up in a great horseshoe curved around the hall. They were lined with soldiers and heavy with food and pitchers of wine. I hadn't seen this hall when we'd been here before, when I'd been invited to Bilal's private rooms. But now he'd emerged, it would seem, and he sat at the very end of the hall on a dais above the rest of his men, in a chair that was more like a throne, a huge, twisted seat made of wood painted to look like gold and stacked heavy with pillows. It took a moment for the first of Rahim's men to see us.
Commander Rahim, sir,
a young soldier at the far end of the table exclaimed, standing up and knocking over his chair. It crashed onto the tile floor loud enough that several other heads turned our way. Shazad's hand strayed to her side at the same time as I touched the trigger on my gun for comfort. But the soldier strode forward, embracing Rahim, as he let out a relieved laugh, and then, seeming to remember himself, released him and offered a lopsided salute.
We thought you were dead, Commander.
The hall was quieting now, and almost every pair of eyes in the place was turned toward us, including Bilal's. His eyes were sunk so deep that all I could see were shadowed pits there. His hollow-looking face made him look crueler than he ever had. Bilal was fading fast. He was so emaciated that he looked like a small boy sitting in a too-big seat his father had left him, trying to hold it against a prince who held more power than he ever would. For a moment, I felt a stab of pity for him. But as I looked around, I could see that the men's wine cups were full but untouched. They had been well trained, most of them by Rahim, and Bilal was ready to kill them all.
It's not that easy to get rid of me,
Rahim said, clapping his soldier on his back. His words were jovial, but his eyes fixed on Bilal were anything but...
What's happening here?
Looking at his crumbling body, I hadn't been entirely sure Bilal would be able to stand, but he rose to his feet gingerly.
A celebration, he declared, his voice still carrying across the halls in spite of his illness. In anticipation of your arrival and your annihilation of the foreign threat.
He signaled one of the servants, who rushed forward with a tray of wine glasses for us.
Funny, that.
Rahim took a full wine glass without hesitation.
Here I'd heard rumors of you striking alliances with foreigners. I'm sure your father would have marveled at that.
Bilal's eyes danced to me and Jin and Sam. I felt the memory of the burn of Zahir's kiss on my mouth. If I was going to say anything, do anything, now was the time. I could save Bilal. I could end this without bodies. I glanced down at the wine glass that was being offered to me and kept my lips sealed. Yes, well, Bilal said, after letting Rahim's accusation hang a long moment in the air.
I am in good company, making alliances our fathers would not be pleased at.
Rahim started to advance toward the dais, walking slowly, deliberately.
A toast, then, he said.
We all watched as hundreds of men raised their glasses obediently, Rahim's army falling in line.
A toast,
Bilal agreed.
To our esteemed commander Rahim on his victory and return.
To the commander,
the crowd echoed, bringing the glasses up. I was about to cry out, to stop them, to warn them, but Rahim got there first.
Wait.
He held up his hand. It was an order called out in a room full of soldiers, and it had been issued by their leader, their true one. Every single one of them stopped in an instant. And surrounding Lord Bilal stood an entire room of men, silently reminding him where their true loyalty lay. That this was Rahim's army. He held out his cup to Lord Bilal.
You don't have a drink, my lord. You can't drink to my health without it. Besides, it would be rude of your men to drink before you.
Rahim stepped onto the dais, pulling himself up to his lord's level. Except Rahim stood a head taller than Bilal, at least. He didn't break his gaze as he held out his own glass for his one-time friend. Finally, Lord Bilal reached for the cup. As both their hands closed over it, Rahim leaned in close to Bilal. I saw his lips move, saying something to him in a low voice. A sad smile spread over Bilal's face, but he didn't say anything. He just pulled back, prying the glass from Rahim's fingers. He raised the glass.
To your victory,
he said again.
And long life.
And then he drank, deep and long. He hadn't finished draining it before his legs gave out. He was dead before he hit the ground. Chapter 33. I found Layla in Bilal's rooms. I hadn't expected to. I didn't need to be involved in the aftermath of Bilal's death. Rahim and Ahmed and Jin and Shahzad could take care of that. So I'd gone to Bilal's rooms looking for his books. I was hoping that he had more on the man in the mountain, that I might find answers about the Sinmaker. It had been an easy thing to think of giving away Zahir's kiss to Bilal. But now, if I was going to give it to someone I really cared about, I needed to know if it was a trick. He promised they would live to an old age, but I knew Jean's ways. It could mean that whomever I gave his gift to would age 100 years when I kissed them. It could mean I would grant them a cripplingly ancient life, so they were forced to watch everyone around them die. I couldn't do that to Ahmed, or to Jin. I came desperate for answers. Instead, I found a princess curled up like a little girl on Bilal's bed, letting the smoke from his funeral pyre billow through the open window. I paused in the doorway, looking at her tiny figure in the dark, knees tucked to her chest, bare feet burrowing into the stitching of the heavy blanket covered in hunting seams that was sprawled over the bed. I knew she was aware of me, but she didn't turn around. It was you, wasn't it? I asked Layla's back. You poisoned his mind into the idea of killing all those soldiers so that we couldn't have them, so that your brother couldn't go to war against your father. How did you do it? Layla's shoulders shook silently, like in a laugh. It was the first sign of life I'd seen from her. You have seen me fool and manipulate you and others dozens of times. You have seen where I grew up, within those walls, with women who used their bodies and their minds like weapons. Slowly, she turned to face me. She looked different from the girl we'd left here. The burning, indignant anger in her had turned to a twisted, ugly kind of rage. And yet, after all this, you still think I'm too innocent to play this game? Her eyes were rimmed with red. I didn't know whether it was from crying or from the smoke. I strode across the room past the bed to the other wall. From the window, I could see down onto Bilal's pyre. It was surrounded by soldiers, doing their duty to him, even though he hadn't done right by them. I guess the rebellion has made me more of an optimist about folks than I used to be, I offered. I closed the window and turned back to Layla. Have you come to kill me? She asked. No. Your brother will probably come looking for you soon. It would be too obvious who'd done it. It was a joke. Mostly. I considered Layla on the bed. I'd come here looking for information. We'd had a plan back in Isman, before Ahmed had been captured and Emin executed. Get an army, disable the Sultan's machine, take the city. We had the army. We had the words to free Farishtay's captured soul from the machine and bring down the wall, and the Abdals with it. Now we just needed the city, and for that we needed to disable the machine. I might as well ask. If I free Farishtay's energy, that machine's not just going to quietly turn itself off, is it? Who knows? Layla slid back down onto the bed, like she was suddenly exhausted, propping her head on one arm. It's never been tested before. It's all just a theory until you test it. That's what my mother taught me. Rahim thinks I don't remember her, but I think I've proved that I am more of both my mother and my father than he will ever be. And if you were theorizing? I pressed, before she could stumble down some path I couldn't bring her back from. If I were theorizing, she closed her eyes. I would say no. I don't think it will. Tameed and Layla were both smart. And now that they'd both told me the same thing, it was a safe bet they were probably right. It had seemed far away until now, but suddenly it seemed very near. I felt myself reaching out for something to hang on to, as everything seemed to spin around me. My hand closed around an earthenware pitcher next to the bed. It did nothing to keep me standing when it slid off the table and into my hands. Anger rushed in. Sudden, violent, irrational rage took over. Without thinking, I hurled the pitcher across the room, sending it splintering against the wall before I stormed out. I wasn't sure whom I was looking for as I headed back into the courtyard, on the opposite side from the funeral pyre. Jin, maybe. Instead, I ran straight into Sam. He caught me by the arms as I walked into his chest.
Well, he said, isn't this very Leofric and Elfleda of us?
The love story he'd been babbling about back in Sazi, the one that ended with them both dying.
Meeting in secret in the dark.
And then he trailed off as he saw my face, that I was in no mood for jokes.
Are you all right?
I glanced over his shoulder. The twins were standing there, looking at me anxiously. I must really not look all right. What are you three doing out here? I asked instead of answering.
Oh, well...
Sam stepped away from me, releasing my arms.
Rahim got the news from one of his soldiers. After we left here, my former queen, long may she reign, struck an alliance with a Galen king. May he die a painful death and rot in a ditch.
For once, Sam sounded serious. So the alliance had gone through. Since we hadn't taken the captain's deal, they had gone and made another ally. Made Moradji their enemy. The Galen hated our kind, hated anything that wasn't wholly human. Sam might have turned traitor on Her Highness, but his queen had betrayed a whole lot of her people by striking this alliance, too.
Captain Westcroft and the rest of all those nice fellows who want me dead marched down to join the siege 3 days ago.
So we're going to scout things out?
Iz interjected, chipper as ever. He was clearly glad to be moving. The twins hated being in one place too long.
Shazad said we needed to use all our advantages now, Maz added.
How come you both get to be the blue-eyed bandit, and we're known as advantages?
Iz asked.
Yeah, Maz agreed. We demand a better legendary nickname.
I forced a smile and got the satisfaction of the pair of them grinning back, pleased that they'd amused me. I glanced at Sam, understanding.
You're going with them?
The twins didn't need an escort to report to Shazad. Maybe Sam thought this would impress her, acting like a real soldier. But then I saw the troubled look on his face. He might be one of us now, but he was born in Albus. Those were his people laying siege to our city. He needed to see it.
All right.
I moved toward Iz.
Let's go.
They didn't need me with them any more than they did Sam, but they didn't question me coming with them either. The twins burst into rocks as Sam and I wrapped our shimas around our faces against the wind. I had to see whatever was awaiting us down in the city. Night had fallen completely by the time we reached Izmon, but we could still see everything from the air. The light from the dome of fire made it glow faintly in the dark. But more than that, the ground around the city burned like an ember. The siege camp had been destroyed. The Galen tents, which had stood in perfect military lines when we'd left just a few weeks back, were now smoldering ash. The bodies of the Albish who had joined forces with them would be among them, too. Thousands of men who'd lined up around the walls had been annihilated, the ground still burning from the force that had destroyed them. The Abdals turned against our enemies. I couldn't see Sam's expression in the dark, but he would mourn his people, no doubt, in a way I couldn't. The Sultan might be our enemy, but he had dispelled Moradji's enemies. Maybe it was right that it should end like this. This was a war between the people who belonged in this desert, not the people who wanted to own it. We would decide it for ourselves, no one else. All I could hear were Iz's wingbeats as we soared over the city. It reminded me of the destruction Norsham used to cause. Fire. Annihilation. A force that wasn't natural, that came from the gene, sweeping across armies and destroying everything in its path. They dared to try to take power from the Sultan, so he'd shown them his true power. This was what would happen to us if we tried to face the Sultan while he still controlled the Abdals, if we went to face armies of metal with an army of men. We would burn too. Everyone would. Jin, Ahmed, Shazad, Delilah, Sam, Rahim, the refugees from Sazi, the soldiers from Ilyaz, the hopeful men and women who had joined us in village after village. Unless I dispelled Farishtay's power, unless I used the words Tamid had given me. The first language, in a voice that could tell no lies. The same tongue that had trapped the gene, used to free him. Either I died, or we all did.
All right, here's what we do.
A map of Isman was rolled out in front of Shahzad. Rahim had taken over Bilal's rooms, but there was no time to clear them out. So for now, Shahzad's room was our war room. We can march from here to here in a day. She pointed to a spot on the map that she had marked, in the desert west of Isman. That puts us out of sight and out of range of the city when night falls. We wait here for morning. At dawn, you two fly to the east. She pointed at me and Sam with the tip of her knife. Get into the tunnels and to the machine. While you do that, our army marches under cover of one of Delilah's illusions toward the city. When the fire drops, the Sultan will be unprepared for us to storm the walls. We want to break through Eket's gate first to get access to Ren Street before the army is fully mobilized. She pointed in turn at the streets of the city she had grown up in. From there, we can take the western ramparts and have the upper ground. Trained soldiers should be on the front lines. The less trained should hang back in the artillery.
No, Rahim disagreed. We should mix as many of the untrained rabble among my soldiers as we can.
That's too risky. It will be harder for untrained men to hold a line. The Sultan's soldiers will break through that much quicker.
It's better than if they break through the first line to find no second line of defense,
Rahim argued.
Our soldiers would be mowed down like wheat.
So you want to throw untrained men and women in the middle of soldiers so that they can draw fire away from trained soldiers?
Shahzad didn't raise her voice. It was a steady kind of anger.
I didn't say that.
But you know they're more likely to die.
They're untrained. Of course they're more likely to die,
Rahim said, every inch the commanding officer.
That's enough.
Ahmed held up his hand, stopping both of them. He looked at me, wanting to hear what I thought. I'd seen the city, the destruction. I knew what we were facing. I still had Zahir's gift. I could decide this battle here and now if I gave it to Ahmed. It wouldn't matter what we did. He would live. He would survive, even if it was a massacre. But if I gave it to him, I couldn't give it to Jin. I reckon you should listen to Shahzad, I said. Don't throw bodies in your father's way to slow him down. They weren't just bodies. They were two eager farmers' sons and daughters who had laughed when Shahzad tossed them in the dust like war was a game. The people of the desert who came to us because we were offering better than they had. And all we were asking in return was that they lay down their lives.
We still need greater numbers.
Rahim shook his head.
We might be able to win this fight if we're very smart and very lucky, but I don't like counting on luck.
Well, lucky for us, I am very smart. It was Shahzad's turn to interrupt him this time. A flicker of a smile flitted over Sam's face. He had been quiet since we'd seen the destruction outside the walls of Isman, but he was clearly enjoying Shahzad and Rahim arguing. What about the people in the city? I asked. I was thinking about the machine, about what disabling it would mean if it really did go up in flames. If a genie's dying energy really had raised cities and armies in the past. Amani's right, Shahzad said. There are still rebels in the city, and others who are loyal to us. That hadn't been what I meant, but the result was the same.
We can't spread the word in Isman that we're coming, Rahim said. If we lose the element of surprise, my father can annihilate us before we even reach the walls. But if we can get them out, then they can fight,
Jin said, understanding what Shahzad was saying, where Rahim didn't.
Fine.
Ahmed nodded.
Sam and Delilah.
He turned to the two of them.
Take a small number down to the city with you and start evacuating.
I knew why he'd pick them. Sam to get people through the tunnels, and Delilah to hide what they were doing.
Get as many people out as you can. Leave now.
I realized suddenly that this might be the last time we were all together like this. Some of us definitely weren't going to survive the battle that was coming. We'd already lost so many to the war. But as I looked from them to Ahmed, to Jin, to everyone else around the table, I suddenly knew exactly who was most likely to die. The one of us who was least afraid. The one who needed to be saved the most. When we were finished, everyone dispersed, leaving just me and Shahzad behind.
You should tell him, you know,
she said when we were alone. I didn't need to ask what she meant. She wanted me to tell Jin what I was walking into under that city. Possible death. We'd made a habit of saving each other, Shahzad and I, of having each other's back. Except I couldn't watch her back on the battlefield this time, and she couldn't save me from my fate. Yeah, I said, leaning toward her, looping my arm around her shoulders. I leaned my head against hers and dropped a quick kiss on her cheek, like a gesture between sisters when one of them was headed away from home for a little while. Except we weren't sisters. We'd chosen each other. And now that I'd given her that kiss from Zaheer, and the promise of a life longer than this battle, she wouldn't be coming anywhere with me. I probably should. Chapter 34
The Young Princes.
Once, there were two princes who did not live like princes. Instead of a palace, they lived in three small rooms in a city far away from their father, the Sultan. Instead of fine clothes, they wore cast-offs from other children that their mother sewed to fit them. Instead of fine spiced meats, they ate plain soups and bread. And instead of food being plentiful, it was running out quickly. Their mother had no money, and soon she could no longer feed the children more than once a day. One day, the two young princes were especially hungry. They had scarcely slept for their infant sister crying in the night. That evening, they sat at the table. The first young prince watched his mother cook, and he saw her pull out only two bowls instead of three, since she knew there wasn't enough for two hungry children and a hungry mother. Seeing this made the first young prince angry, because she was his mother, his true mother. His brother's mother was long dead in another country. And when the first prince looked across the table into his brother's bowl, he saw that his brother had gotten a spoonful more of rice. The first prince saw this as a great injustice, and he said things that no brother ought to say to another. That it wasn't fair that one brother should get more food at the cost of another. That he wasn't even his mother's true son, or his own true brother. That if anyone went hungry, it should be the other prince. That it was his fault that they were here and starving anyway. That they should send him away on one of the many boats in the harbor, back to the desert where he came from, and let someone else feed him. The prince had never seen his mother grow so angry as she did at those words. She told her son that she was never to hear him talk like that again. That they were a family, and that he should never be looking into his brother's bowl to see if he had more, but only ever to make sure he had enough. And in punishment, she sent her son to bed without food. The young prince raged. He decided that he had had enough. If his brother would not leave, he would. He was halfway through packing up his pitiful collection of belongings when his brother returned to the small room they shared. He turned out his pockets onto the bed, revealing that they were full of rice. The second prince, feeling sorry that his brother had not eaten dinner, snuck every mouthful of his own into his pockets to bring to his brother later.
The First Prince was astonished to see that his brother was ready to go hungry himself and give everything he had to another, and to one who had wished him away only moments before. It was in that moment that the First Prince understood the goodness of his brother, that the Second Prince had a kinder, more selfless heart than he could ever hope for. And he vowed that though the First Prince might never be as good as his brother, he would do all he could to protect him. It was many years later that the girl known as the Blue-Eyed Bandit came to him, far from that table in the little home where they had grown up, and she asked him what he believed happened after death. And he understood what it was that she meant to do. He wanted to rage that his brother would get her life and that the foreign prince would be deprived of her in turn. But he had made a vow on that day long ago, and he would keep it. Chapter 35. Jin did what he did best when I told him. He left me before I could leave him, joining Sam and Delilah in the advance party headed toward Ismon. He claimed to Ahmed that someone needed to take care of their little sister. I was grateful that he didn't tell our prince the truth. If Ahmed knew he was sending me to die by disabling that machine, he would try to save me. That's what he did, after all. He tried to save people. That's what I was doing, too. Jin had been gone 3 days when a lookout reported there was an army making its way up the western side of the mountain. Not from Ismon. From our side of the desert. Rahim moved into action immediately, preparing his men to fight. They were used to this, to skirmishes in the mountains, though none of us had been expecting that we would need to defend ourselves before reaching Ismon. But as we stood watching from the walls in the early dawn air, over the crest of the hill below, a banner bobbed into view. Not one stitched with the Sultan's colors. Instead, we saw Ahmed's golden sun. A few moments later, the first figure came into view, and I realized that I knew her. It was Samira, the daughter of the Emir of Saramotai. Or she had been, until someone had overturned her father and killed him. We'd left her ruling her father's city. Clearly the role suited her. "Hold your fire!" I ordered Rahim and his men, who were poised with their guns on the wall. "Don't shoot!" I rushed into the courtyard, and I was out the gates before anyone could stop me, Ahmed and Shahzad close behind. When she was near enough to be heard, Samira ducked her head in a quick nod to Ahmed as she reached the wall.
"Your Exalted Highness, we heard you have need of men to fight. And women. I have 100 with me who don't want to sit behind our walls and wait for our enemies."
100, Shahzad said under her breath, standing next to me. "That's a good start." And then, speaking louder, she asked, "How did you know where we were?"
"General Hamad,"
Samir said simply. I felt Shahzad tense beside me. "My father?" she said, and for just a second she sounded like a little girl again. Samira nodded. "News that the rebel prince can't be killed because he is protected by the Djinn reached even us in the west. And then the general rode through with news that if anyone truly wanted to defend their country, this was their last chance." She smiled at our startled faces. "Now are you going to let us in, or do we have to storm your walls? I have to say, they don't look like much next to ours."
Saramotai wasn't the last city to join us. A bigger party arrived from Fahali 2 days later, sent into action by the general as well. The port city of Gasab joined us a day after that,
and more kept trickling in from small desert and mountain towns where the news had spread. Ahmed was alive. The rebel prince had come back from the dead to free the country from foreign rule. Sometimes they came in large groups, sometimes one by one, to pledge themselves to his cause. Until we couldn't wait anymore. We were out of time to train new recruits, out of time to get more weapons. We needed to march before the Sultan marched on Ilyaz, and we lost the element of surprise.
How many in all?
Ahmed asked that night, before we descended the mountain. Shahzad and Rahim traded a look.
Enough, Shahzad said.
Enough for what? I asked.
A fair fight, Rahim said. Our father isn't going to give us a fair fight, though, is he?
Ahmed said.
No, Rahim replied. I doubt he is.
We had marched up the mountain with 300 men and women. We marched with close to 1,000. We made our way down from Ilyaz into the desert flats around the great city of Isman. We marched together to war. The sun was just beginning to set when we reached the campsite where Sam, Jin, Delilah, and the rabble they had managed to get out of the city waited for us, just out of sight of Isman, covered by Delilah's illusion. There were a few hundred of them. I recognized our rebels and some other allies, but many more were strangers. I was all too conscious of how many people were left in the city if the whole thing went up in flames. We pitched camp alongside them. I didn't see Jin among the crowd. I desperately wanted to go looking for him, but that would be selfish when we were trying to let each other go, when only he really had to let me go. And I'd spent a lot of time learning not to be so damn selfish. He didn't come looking for me, either. As night fell, I was summoned to see Ahmed and Shahzad for a few last instructions before we went into battle. This would all end tomorrow. That thought hung over our army. By the next sunset, either we would all be dead, or Ahmed would be sitting on the throne. Before I could enter Ahmed's tent, the flap of his pavilion was flung open violently, blinding me for just a second as a blaze of light spilled into the darkness. I shielded my eyes instinctively, but I could still see through the gaps in my fingers. I knew Jin from his outline alone. He was a dark silhouette against the light streaming from Ahmed's tent. Caught, frozen, holding the tent flap open. The glare hid his expression from me. What I did see was his free hand twitch out toward me, as if to grab me and stop me, to hold me back from what I had to do. And then his fingers curled inward, fighting the want, fighting the need to stop me. The reaching turned into a fist that dropped to his side. He let the tent flap fall, plunging us both into darkness, as he walked past without touching me. I didn't turn around as he went, as I listened to his footsteps fade in the sand. I waited until I couldn't feel him at my back before I pushed open the flap to Ahmed's tent. Preparations were ringing around the sands when I stepped back outside. Rahim was running his soldiers and our rabble through drills. No one was going to get much sleep with a battle on the horizon, and Isman was an imposing inky black silhouette against the stars in the distance. It loomed large next to our small tents that dotted the sand, a behemoth facing a scattering of scarabs. Like the destroyer of worlds, huge monster in the old stories, the great snake who had been slain by the first hero. In the stories, it was always the monster who lost. But I knew better than anyone that stories and truth weren't the same thing. Shahzad could talk numbers all she liked, but we were awfully bold to think we were going to win. A rabble of half-trained, barely armed rebels against the might of the Sultan
and his unstoppable Abdal army. The city had seemed to get bigger as the sky darkened, like it was growing into the night itself, shadowed edges blurring into the sky until it was blotting out even the stars, pulling me to it with its long shadow.
There will be a great deal of death here tomorrow.
The voice slithered unexpectedly out of the darkness, making me turn around sharply. There was a man standing a few paces behind me. I could only see an outline of him against the light from the tents, but I could tell he was wearing one of the uniforms of Ilyaz. One of ours, then. I relaxed. I hadn't realized how far I'd strayed until I looked back. I was halfway between my people and my enemy's city, on the edge of straying outside the bounds of Delilah's illusion. Now I saw it laid out below me, colorful tents dotted across the sands, lit up by the campfires and oil lamps. From here it looked like thousands of lanterns littering the desert, screaming defiance against the encroaching night. "Did Rahim send you to fetch me back?" I asked the soldier. There was no other reason he'd be this far out from camp as well. The silhouetted man seemed unnaturally still.
"No, he didn't send me. No man commands me anymore."
It was a strange answer given in a strange accent, and it was strange that he had been able to sneak up on me, too. I drew back a cautious step, glancing behind him to see if I might be able to dodge around him, outrun him back to the tents. That was when I noticed he hadn't left any footprints in the sand. And I let out a breath. Not strange, then. Just not human. "Zaheer," I greeted the genie.
"Daughter of Bahadur."
I still couldn't see his face in the darkness. It was unsettling.
"It seems you've discarded another gift I've given you."
"I didn't discard anything. I just gave it to someone else." If the Sinmaker's gift was real, Shahzad was now untouchable in battle. "Someone who needs it." He shook his head, like some mockery of a disappointed human expression he had seen and was doing a bad imitation of now. A sorrowful gesture without any real sorrow.
"You wouldn't kill a prince. You wouldn't kiss a prince. What am I to do with you, daughter of Bahadur?"
"I think you've done enough." He ignored me.
"Luckily, I have one more gift for you."
"I don't want any more of your gifts, Zaheer." I was tired, too tired to argue with him, to try to outsmart him in whatever game he was playing with me this time.
"Trust me, you want this one, daughter of Bahadur."
He pulled a ring off his finger and offered it to me. I didn't reach out for it. This tasted of a trick. I just wasn't sure what the trick was yet.
"Take it,"
Zaheer urged.
"I made you a promise that I am bound to keep. To give you what you want."
"And what is it that I want?" I asked.
"You want to live,"
Zaheer said simply. I felt the chasm of fear I'd been trying to look away from all these weeks open inside me anew. And even in the dark, I could tell he was smirking. Because we both knew he was right. More than anything, that was what I wanted. He turned the ring so that it caught the light from the camp, drawing my eye. It was a bronze band with a single bauble mounted on it. But when I looked closer, I saw that it wasn't a gemstone or a pearl. It looked like glass, and inside there was a shifting, colorless light.
"You want to release Farishtay's soul and stay alive. Farishtay's endless fire has to go somewhere, but you don't need to burn.
It can be contained inside this ring. All you have to do, once you are near enough the machine, is smash the glass on this ring, and all that immortal energy, it will not lash out and annihilate